This type is an assistive technology for dyslexic users. So it's a project that I did when I first learned Python programming. So first I will talk about dyslexia, and I'll show you my program and give a demonstration. Then I will talk about the three most exciting experiences that I feel will be useful. And also, if I have time, I'll talk about the most dreadful experiences. Conclusions, and then I'll take a few questions. Okay. Dyslexia is a difficulty in the acquisition of fluent reading and writing skills that is neurological in origin. It affects about 10% of the world population, regardless of the language they speak. And there is no cure in this kind of condition. There are many forms of dyslexia, but for our purpose, I'm only concerned with a particular form called dysgraphia. It is a deficiency in the ability to write or type, and not due to intellectual impairment. So a dysgraphia patient, they lack the basic grammar or spelling skills. For example, they cannot differentiate between the letters P, Q, and B and D. These letters will look similar in their eyes. And often they write or type the wrong words when they try to formulate their thoughts down on the paper or on the computer. But there's a common misconception that dyslexic users are retards. Actually, they are not. And let me show you some of the famous dyslexics in the history, and some of them are still living today. For example, Keira Knightley, who is the actress in the, I think, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
She has no problem memorizing her script, despite she has a dyslexic condition. And most important of them all is this fellow. So for those who are new to Singapore, M.M. Lee Kuan Yew is the one who founded Modern Singapore. So he did this without using my software. So imagine what he could have done with that software. Okay. So I think I'm able to convince you that dyslexic people are not retards. They just need the right tools to perform. Okay, the idea of this type is very simple. It's similar to the text input function in your mobile phone. Okay, as the dyslexic user types a word in any window, the program will try to predict what he's about to type by matching what he types with a dictionary. Then the program offers what possible words as suggestions in a pop-up window. And as the user chooses one of the options, the program auto-completes the word for the user. And the program can be downloaded from my website here. And let me mention there's a companion project called Typing It, but it was done in another programming language called AutoBot P. Okay, let me show you my program. Okay, I'm going to use my program to type a sentence. If you know, this sentence is the DRY principle in Python. Okay, when my program is running, it just sits in the system tray. Okay. As you type the characters, the program will offer word suggestions, and if you choose one, it will automatically complete for you. As you type more characters, it will narrow down the choice. Okay. If you want to undo, just type the off key to undo. Single. You can skip a few characters if you want. Yep, that's it. So it actually helps to save the keystrokes when the dyslexic users is typing. So the rest of the software are just different ways to configure the software. For example, you can set the number of suggestions in the tip and also set the font size, yeah, etc. Okay, here is a schematic view of the program code. The program is done in Python and using WS Python as the GUI. And also I use py2exe to compile the program code into exe files for easier distribution. And it reads what the user types through a module called pyhook. Send out the characters using another module called sendKeys. And in the process, it uses some Windows API. So this is a software for Windows, and it's not, unfortunately, it's not portable, so it can't be ported to, say, Mac. And forget about PyGram, because I have trouble, it has trouble passing the unit test in Windows, so I didn't use this. Okay, let me share with you some of the interesting experiences. I hope it may be useful to you. Okay, number three is the sendKeys module. sendKeys is a module that is used to send out keys. It actually generates the keyboard events as if you are typing them in a window. This example code is I use sendKeys to send out hello world. Just use sendKeys function in the string. You can actually do this also with the print statement, but the difference is the sendKeys you are able to send for example control or alternate or shift or some other function keys in window. So you can use it to do some automation work in Windows, because Windows has a comprehensive list of keyboard shortcuts. For example, Control N is creating a new window, alternate F4 is closing the window. So you can combine all these key combinations and do some automation with sendKeys. The next on my list is profiling. This was when at one stage I found that there is a scalability problem in my program. When I double the size of the dictionary, the program is running very slow, so I use profiling tool to try to figure out where the bottleneck was. Just run this command in a command prompt, then you will obtain this kind of output. It's very easy to understand. TOT time is actually the time spent in a function call, but excluding other function calls within that call. And CUM time is the time spent on a function call, but including other calls inside that call. So when I sort this table by column CUM time in descending order, the problem becomes very clear. Here I can see that this on key down is actually the keyboard event handler is taking too long time to respond. It's about 1 second per call, so it's unacceptable. As I go down, I can see which method or function is causing the problem. Here, this is the function used within this event handler, and there are too many calls in this function. So later on, I try to optimize this function. After that, I can see actually a big improvement in the performance, like 100 times faster. Whenever you have run into a scalability problem, this is the technique you might want to consider to use. Number one is a plugin framework. At this stage, I realized that there are many ways the program can read the dictionary. For example, it can load the dictionary from a text file. You save all the English words inside a the text file and ask the program to load from the text file. Alternatively, the program can learn from what the user types, and then you have to ask the program to load the dictionary from the memory. And some other developer might want to save the words in a database and load from the database. So actually, I'm looking for a way for different developers to extend my program. This is where the plugin framework comes in. A plugin framework should be able to perform three things. First, it should allow the developer to define a mount point, which is the place where you want to extend the program. Secondly, it should allow you to define a plugin. Plugin is a program extension at that particular mount point, and it should also provide a way to iterate over all plugins at a particular mount point. And this simple plugin framework by Marty Elshin is implement all this in a very, very simple manner. You can download this framework by Google for this simple plugin framework. I think the whole framework are just 6 lines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. To define a mount point, what you do is you subclass this class plugin mount class. And if you notice, there's a difference here because this plugin mount is a subclass of the type class. That makes it something called meta class. And to define a plugin, you just subclass the mount point you just defined. So all mount points are subclasses of plugin mount, and all plugins are subclasses of your mount point. And to iterate over all plugin, you just iterate over the class variable here. This variable contains the list of all plugins at that particular mount point. Here is an example. To define a mount point, you just subclass the plugin mount. And because plugin mount is a meta class, so you have to use this statement when you subclass it. Then you can factor out all the common class attributes or methods that you are going to use in your plugin and put them here. And you write some documentation, provide some clues as to how to define a plugin at this particular mount point. And this is an example of how to define a plugin. Here I declare that this class to be a plugin at this mount point. Okay. Of course, here you need to implement those methods and attributes that are required for it to be a valid plugin. Then it's very easy to iterate over all your plugins. Just use this comprehension here. And I actually use this method to create a list of a menu of all my plugins in the window, and let the user enable or disable them. Yeah. Just now I talked about the three most interesting experiences. Now are the three most dreadful experiences. So number three is actually the Windows extension to Python. But I think Mark is not here, so okay. I'll say. Okay, I want to calculate the coordinates of the caret. Caret means the vertical blinking line when you are typing something in any window or in a text view. Because I want to display my pop-up near the caret, so I need to get the position of the caret. This is the code I had to use because I couldn't find a function in the PyWin32 that actually provides this. And in another programming language, I think it takes only 2 lines to calculate the caret position. So it's not fun using PyWin32. And another case is, this is to copy a string into the clipboard. Again, there are many lines, and in another programming language, just 1 line. And here, there are some errors that need to be caught in the exception handling. So just now the error can be caught inside Python, but here I encountered a bug that can't be caught even by the Python exception handling. WxPython is a GUI package for Python, and I think at this point of time they have already came out with a newer release. So actually I'm using the older one. The older one was very unstable. So at one point of time, it gave me a crash on exit bug. I think the bug occurs at C++ level, so it can't be caught. But luckily, I used the SVN, so I compared the two revisions before and after the bug and managed to pinpoint where I introduced the bug. So the moral of the story is that you need to use a version control system whenever you do coding. Okay. Number one, just now the tool nearly gave me some headaches, but this one is really nightmare. I use PyTool.exe to compile my code into exe file, and when I first run it, it gives me this DLL not found. So I copy this DLL from the internet and put it inside my system folder. But then it then complained that it failed to find certain modules in this one, WxPython. So I have to revert it to a previous version. Then it successfully compiled. But when I run it, again DLL is not found. This time I think it needs Microsoft Visual C++ runtime. And the code compiled in Vista couldn't run on XP. So there's a big question in my mind, why Python has to use Microsoft compiler to compile the release, since there are open source compiler available. Okay, conclusion. Overall, it's fun, fast, productive using Python. With the correct libraries, techniques, one can do almost anything with Python. And last but not least, time and patience will pay off. That's all I want to say. Thank you for your attention. Any questions?
It seems a lot of your problems are related to Windows. have you thought of using something else?
Windows is the more popular operating system. So
right.
I create this software in Windows first. And
so your user base is on Windows?
Yeah, I use a lot of Windows API.
Sorry,
I think it's better than .NET framework, but worse than, of course, if you use C++ purely, it's faster than .NET.
Right. Yeah. Cool, thanks.
And C++ is difficult to use.
Okay. I came in just as you had the send keys up on the screen. Do you plan to send anything else than ASCII
will send, please? In my program, I only send out ASCII characters and also in Control V, the paste command, I send this also.
Otherwise, if you needed to send Unicode characters, you could look for send
key syntax,
which
uses syntax. So far, I haven't implemented Unicode support in the program.
So your selection algorithm, you didn't really talk about it in your talk. Is that something that you created or did you use an existing one?
The algorithm, let me show the slides. I actually used some algorithms here to sort the suggestions. So the more probable suggestion will float on top, and those less probable will be at the below. And another one is here. I think I have an algorithm that let the program learn from what the user types. This one I actually use the idea is similar to a data mining algorithm, but I created the algorithm myself. Yeah.
And what are you storing the dictionaries in? It's like you're allowing the user to update the dictionary, right?
Yeah.
Using like SQLite or something like that?
But here, no, there's another way that the program loads the dictionary. It's from the text file and user can edit the text file. This one is close to user so far.
Okay.
I haven't implemented an interface that the user can edit the words stored inside this dictionary.
Sorry.
Have
you ever considered other methods of storing dictionary? I mean, is the text file the best case? I mean, I'm asking this because I really have no idea when it comes to small databases. I mean, is it better to store this SQLite or text file or something more?
Yeah, actually, I have used the database to store my phrases, but the overhead is too large, it's too slow. So actually, I use two approaches. One is the text file. Another one is just a Python dictionary, just key value storage. It's much faster.
Right? The Python's dictionary data structure is not persistent.
Yeah, I save it to a file when the program closes.
Okay.
So I've actually tried to use the shell. Another shell module is a persistent one, but that one consumes too much of the memory. Yeah, so I rather use a simple key value storage.
Oh, XML.
XML is complicated for the user to edit.
Oh, so it's meant for users.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No.
How did you decide to what kind of algorithm do you use to like actually learn words or phrases? Like, is it something like it's kind of a predictive algorithm, right? So like, say, if you type a word, does it like try to predict what the next word is? I'm sorry, I might have convoluted it, but
the basic idea of the algorithm is that the probability of that the user is typing a word is the number of characters that are correctly matched to the word,
okay,
divided by the total length of the word.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the basic idea.
So if you like type something like A, then it would like kind of try to figure out like, from what you've typed which word you're trying to type. Or
let me give you for example, you want to type a word apple, right?
Okay.
You have already typed APP, so the probability is about 3/5.
Okay, so you're trying to figure out which word they're actually trying to type.
And another important element is that I sort my word list according to the frequency that it occurs on the internet.
Right.
So this one is a frequency ordered word list.
Okay.
Sorry, how do you
solve
the case of the frequency?
I think somebody else has already done this on the internet, so I just download their word list. But I add some words that are missing from the list.
So
it's
is there any contextual information between two words? Like, do you store like some model?
Contextual, yeah. When the program learns from the typing, right, from what the user types, it actually keeps some contextual information. I intend to use this information to improve the accuracy, but this PyBrain doesn't work. So actually, the contextual information isn't utilized to the full potential.
Okay.
that's kind of what I was thinking about asking was, like, have you thought about doing something kind of like how you can do on, say, like an iPhone, where it kind of can predict, I mean, it predicts like what words you're typing, but something that would allow you to like come up with what word actually comes next, so that you can actually improve, like without actually even starting to type the word, it would kind of know based on the previous words in the sentence, like what word is going to come next. And in that case, like you would use probably something like a Markov model, or like some sort of like a probabilistic model.
NLP, natural language processing.
Right. Yeah, and natural language processing is a fairly robust kind of thing. I was thinking more along the lines of just like making something similar to what that does, and integrating that into Blitzcypher, because that would be kind of interesting.
Dyslexic, right?
Yes.
So the dyslexic person types dog, will it come out God?
Is
it supposed to be that,
eh? Dog. Actually, this poem. Let me see. Let's say,
dog correcting would be also kind of cool.
I think some very heavily dyslexic user might have problem differentiating these two. And I think you need to increase the level of typographical error, and also the minimum, lower this minimum match characters. It should be able to, I don't have the word dog and god in my word list because it's too short. But it can be done. You can add these two words into the word list, and you will be able to differentiate.
How many users have you tested this with?
How many users? I actually just completed the project. I just uploaded to the website. So far, only, I think, 100 users. 100,000
users. Got any feedback from people?
Yeah, for the companion project, right? My project is a closed source development. There is a companion project called Typing It. It's also on my website. I think there are 5,000 downloaders per month for this software. Hiring a Python developer, you might consider me. I'm actually looking for software engineering. These are my skill set. Python, like a Django framework, some JavaScript. Yeah. Here's my contact.
Okay, thank you.